3, 2, 1. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Hit Chat Group Chat. We got the whole gang here, myself, Connor Reynolds, below JP Fashone, and to my side, we have Connor Burns. Let's switch it up today. Connor Burns, how are you doing, sir?
Doing great.
Doing great. Done another day of working with the youth. Yeah, man, just having fun. You know, I with my junior academy tonight. It's kind of like a high school group, but like a little less. You know, we'll go like four times a week kind of thing. So I was kind of thinking, like, I feel like a lot. Like, obviously, when I get guys down to the States and stuff and they have success, it's really cool. But I think I find more gratification with working with guys who, like, just straight up, we're not good at baseball, and now they're playing high school baseball and they're having success. Like, I find like feeling a lot even better about that, just working with those type of kids. So got a lot of that today, which was sweet. So feeling good.
Hey, yo, JP, how are you doing, baby?
Great. It's my favorite time of the year.
Let's go.
We get to kind of like, hey, like the workload's a little bit less, not many dudes in gym, a lot more guys at school, but with them being at school, you get to kind of see all the work that they put in throughout the summer and the winter, and get to see them actually go compete. And, you know, nothing fires me up more than like, hey, you know, we worked for months covering the high fastball. Like, you couldn't touch it when you started. You're kind of okay when you left. And then you get a video from the kid who's like, hey, I hit my first home run this year. And you watch it, and it's a high fastball. And you're like, let's go. That's so sick. So a lot of that going around is just a lot of fun to see.
I love it, man. It's been an absolute treat, almost kind of like getting me refired up again, going through and looking at some of the tweets of guys just hitting absolute nukes. And I found this one account. Let me see if I can pull him up real quick. He's a former guy that played at Virginia and then is essentially like covering college baseball now. And I hadn't found his account until the beginning of the season, like, necessarily started, and he started putting out, like, a lot of content about it. So I don't know if this is his...
Even whatever.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Good account.
The favorite thing that I've had from his account is how everything is essentially, like, a POV from the dugout. So it's almost like I feel like we're, like, I'm in the dugout with the guys, like, hitting it and, like, hearing the energy and, like, there was one from Murray State where you could hear somebody in the background like, don't say anything, don't talk to him, like trying to do the silent treatment and just like little things like that. It's like, I remember like hearing that in the dugout and stuff like that, and it's firing me up. Seeing some guys with like really good base running and put out a tweet not so long ago where it's like, you know, I love the bombs. I love, you know, triple EVs, triple digit EVs and stuff like that. But like seeing a dude have like really high baseball, like running IQ and just getting a really good job, but just like little things like that, and just seeing the team like go crazy over it, like the atmosphere, the intensity, like I miss it. Baseball's back, boys. We're back.
There's nothing better. College baseball is the fucking best. Yeah, even like JP on your point, like one of my guys was like, yeah, 3 for 4, hit my first college home run today. I was like, let's fucking go there. This is your engine, McCook Community College, at a baby.
Yeah, because, you know, working in a facility like we do, you know, you do all this training and, you know, you do the KPIs, you do the data, like everything looks like it's improving, but you really don't know until the umpire says play ball and you kind of go, well, I hope we were right. I hope we got right, because it's now's the time.
And to kind of run off of what you said earlier, Burns, so I actually got a text from one of my athletes that's been he's been in a lot, like 2 times a week. He actually got cut as a sophomore last year at his high school. So he's a junior now at a school that very good, may or may not have won, the title for their classification, last year. So really good program. And, it's been noticed, how much better he's gotten. He's had multiple coaches come up to him and say like, hey, like, where have you been training? We can tell that you've gotten better. To a point where they've actually reached out and said, like, at minimal, we feel very confident that you're going to be making JV, possibly even varsity. And so to have, like, that kind of turnaround, and honestly, like, it's awesome to be able to see a kid grow like that and show like, all right, like we have that ability here at the facility to make an impact, but to see like his face light up, like how excited he was because he's been the one doing the work, right? Like we are there putting them in the right direction. It's up to them to actually decide to do it or not. And he's done it every single time, day in and day out. And so for him to kind of get that reward, obviously trials haven't happened yet, so we're still unsure of kind of that aspect of it. But to see him like get that gratification or that validation of what he's been doing has been working. I mean, that's the text that we're looking for. The text of seeing, like you said, the guy hitting a home run on a high fastball when that's what you've been working on all off season and little stuff like that. Like, I mean, that's why we do it, and it's freaking amazing.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome just to see that. And it's super cool, too, because, like, you've been with that guy on the days where they're like, man, I can't fucking figure this shit out. And you're like, hey, man, it'll be okay. We'll get there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's always good to kind of see those low days and see them have success. It's just it's the best. And college baseball back, unreal. What a time.
What a time to be alive. Well, shoot, we have a little Twitter beef as well. JP, do you have a down the rabbit hole for us?
I do. It's a little bit different today, but I do have one ready.
Beautiful. You want to run that up first?
Let's do it.
All righty, we are switching to Mr. JP Fashone's segment, which is Down the Rabbit Hole, and we are good to go, sir. Take it away.
Okay. So, like I said, today I want to kind of take it a little bit different direction and kind of make this a little bit more of a group, right? A little bit, kind of get some interaction from the boys a little bit.
Hey,
you guys. One of my favorite phrases and one of Tanner Stokey's favorite phrases is space. Maintaining space. Hitting coaches love talking about maintaining space. And I think everybody, like, conceptually kind of has an idea of what that means. I think if I told you, right, I was coaching, you know, one of you guys, and I said, hey, you know, we're losing space, you guys would kind of have an idea what that means, right? And so what I thought I'd do today is go through the thought process of how do we go from like a coaching concept like maintaining space to how the hell do we measure that, right? How do we get a rigorous definition that's good enough that we can actually measure it? So I pulled up a couple athletes that I think don't maintain space well. And what I want to do is kind of talk through what I think space is, where I've kind of gotten to, and then kind of get your guys' input on what you guys see with your athletes, what you guys have seen in these mocaps, and then kind of go from there. So the first athlete we have is a guy that has a lot of linear movement towards the pitcher. He's got a lot of extension, so he kind of thrusts his hips forward. And I would say he loses space, tends to get jammed up, tends to have his point of contact pretty far out in front because he does not like to catch the ball deep. So I'm just going to kind of scroll through and just kind of show this. And if you're listening on a Apple podcast, you need to watch it on YouTube or you need to go to Spotify to see this. So I'm going to play this swing through so you guys can kind of take a look and kind of see what you guys see. So when I watch a hitter, and I'm thinking about space, right? What does that mean? And when I think of guys that don't maintain space, a lot of the times what my eyes key in on is this move right here where the hands kind of pull down, the back gets pretty vertical, and we kind of struggle to get what we talked about last week about getting that barrel kind of behind us, whatever you want to call it, snapping it, turning it, whatever, getting that barrel behind them. There's something that's keeping them from doing that. So the hands tend to pull down and across. And so when they try and get the barrel around, they're either going to do a couple different things. They're going to do what this athlete does, which is kind of start to lean his torso back, push his hips forward to try and get the barrel around. The other thing that my eyes pick up on as far as guys that lose space, and you can see this from the front a little bit easier, when he goes to release that barrel, those hands are going to kind of pull across his body really quick. And it's going to give him that feeling of kind of getting jammed up. It's also going to kind of give me as a coach when I'm watching him, just looks like there's no space. Like, where's the space? And
And so when I start to think about, like, what is space? How would I define that term? My first inclination is to go to some posture, right? Guys that maintain space well typically have an easier time maintaining their posture. And by posture, I just mean if I took a line from kind of the top of this guy's head, ran it straight down his spine, out his tailbone, into the ground, that's kind of what I'm describing as a posture. And so when we look at this athlete, you can kind of see as that chest starts to stand up, he kind of loses the space or loses his posture, right? Kind of the space right between his hips and kind of the plate. And a lot of that for this athlete specifically is coming from these hips wanting to work underneath his torso. And so that's where he kind of tends to lose posture. You're just going to run out of mobility to side bend when those hips start to work out in front. And so when I think of this athlete losing space, I typically would describe this as like, hey, he gets into posterior tilt really quickly, or you can think about the pelvis as like a bowl of water. Posterior tilt would be the water kind of tipping away from the plate. Anterior tilt would be the water tipping onto the plate. So he gets posterior tilt really quickly, which brings his hips up and kind of takes up that room that he had when he hip hinges. And let me bring up another athlete here. The other way I would say that guys lose space, and once again, we still don't have a great definition of what space is a guy like this, where when he goes to turn, you're going to see his front hip joint, pretty much remain in the same spot. And so his kind of center of rotation, or his axis of rotation, is around that front hip joint. And so when his back hip starts to swing around that front hip joint right here, that back hip is going to push out towards the plate, and that front hip doesn't work back fast enough. And so once again, that back hip joint essentially takes up the space that he created by kind of hinging or getting into posture, that kind of space between his pelvis and his torso. And so that angle starts to get less because that back hip starts to push out towards the plate. So he loses space, hands go kind of out and around. We get kind of a longer swing pattern because this athlete still does a pretty good job of getting the barrel turned. But because his hands are jumping out, tends to get jammed a lot, tends to want to catch pitches out front. And once again, I like categorize that as losing space. So a couple of things that I've started to look into to try and like quantify this, or where do we start? I think the first thing I think about is, well, if we're losing space, what's kind of the ramifications downstream, right? If I lose space, I'm going to have to compensate somehow to get the barrel around. Like we saw that first athlete kind of pulling his hands down, or with this athlete kind of getting long around the ball. And when we lose that space, or those hips start to work out towards the plate a little bit too quickly, it's probably going to mess with our hip-shoulder separation to some extent, right? We're not going to be able to decel segments on time. We're typically going to kind of struggle to get the barrel around, so something's going to have to happen. So kind of starting with torso and pelvis angles. So we have the X direction, which would be kind of forward bend, and then backwards bends. You can kind of think of like bending over with your chest. And then Y is the side bend separation, and then Z would be rotation. And when I kind of been starting to find with a handful of guys is they tend to get higher torso pelvic Y angles. So they essentially start side bending early, or side bending too much, something along those lines. Or when they start to rotate their hips, we end up being right around like 8 to 10, 11, 12 degrees of kind of side bend or the hip torso separation in kind of that frontal plane, versus most of our kind of MLB hitters or guys that I would say that don't or do maintain space well, they have a lot lower average kind of torso pelvic Y direction. So not as much side bend, which theoretically could be from that hip kind of jumping out, tends to kind of tip that torso where they try and like make space behind them and then get the barrel around. Could be having something to do with the pelvis just shifting positionally, and that's causing the torso to move because the pelvis and torso are connected. So somewhere along those lines. But I want to hear from you guys. When we think about space and what that means, I guess we'll just start with like, what does that mean to you guys when you think about, hey, this guy maintains space, or he's losing space, he's getting jammed up?
Burnsy?
Maybe, you know, maybe that's a term we've never used.
That's not a term that I hear very often, but like, okay.
And I can jump out too if you need.
I feel like it's kind of what the body is doing to allow, I guess, the barrel to get in the zone early and stay in the zone longer. That's kind of what I'm taking from that. Like, it looks like, especially that first guy, like, it looks like he's really, you know, his lead leg's not blocking efficiently. So then instead of rotating, he's hip extending, right?
Yeah.
And when he's hip extending, it's causing these hands to kind of drop. And then from there, he's just in and out.
Yeah.
Right? He doesn't have a lot of adjustability.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, does that make sense?
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. That's kind of like what I would say is like the downstream effect, right? Like, barrel didn't get in the zone early. For sure. Yeah.
So when I think of space and when I think of being able to either A, maintain space, or B, we're losing space, I like looking at the shoulder plane and hip plane correlation. So as we're seeing here, when this athlete goes to go into the swing, from when they get to foot plant, they're going to have to where they have their chest over the plate, side bend, as we'll call it, hip hinge, whatever you want to do. And as he rotates, we'll see that right hip start to work its way up. And so now we're at two different plane angles. So the hips are almost parallel to the ground, whereas the shoulder plane is trying to be tilted throughout the swing. And so when I think of maintaining space, if an athlete's able to maintain the same angle of which when they get to that full like hip turn, essentially when their torso is facing the pitcher, so when we get to like almost contact, if we're able to have that hip plane and that shoulder plane mirror the similar angles, I feel like one with when we're able to keep that space, so that's going to have where our hips are pushed back a little bit. We're going to probably be able to do a better job of maintaining our weight back a little bit more into our quad, or I apologize, not into our quads, more into our hamstrings, glutes, and our lower back. Whereas when that hip works its way up, like we're seeing here, one, we're going to lose space for our hands to be able to rotate through. And so when our hips and our shoulders aren't able to maintain and stay on the same plane, we're not rotating to where the bat is going to have the optimal centrifugal force. Big words, I know. I've been in the lab reading a little bit. We'll lose that ability to continuously build centrifugal force, because now instead of our hips and our shoulders rotating on the same plane together throughout the swing, now we have our hips working essentially up, because we're now a little bit more in the quads. So we're kind of having our hips working up while our shoulders are trying to rotate through. And so that's what I kind of see. A lot of the time I see, one, like you mentioned earlier, JP, athletes are going to have a further point of contact out in front of them. And so what I also see is, because we're not getting the centrifugal force with the bat, we kind of lose optimal bat speed and possibly rotation as well. And so now we have a slower bat, but then in results, we also have to catch the ball further out in front, which is going to make us to have to essentially determine yes or no to that pitch a lot earlier than we would like, because we, one, have slower bat speed, so we have to say yes sooner, and two, our optimal point of contact is going to have to be further out in front of that plate. So now we're kind of working against us on a double-edged sword of slower bat speed, earlier decision time. And so that's going to make it to where if you're slightly off time a little bit, we're probably going to get a lot of rollovers. Anything that's like off speed or possibly low and in, if that's like a sinker or a changeup from the right-handed side, or if we get like a little two-seam or a cut from the left-handed side, if that ball's working in, then that's going to even make it harder to where the athlete's going to almost have to spin out more. And that's when I think of space and what I'm seeing here on this visual 3D educational skeleton. That's what I kind of see.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's and like you said, I think like that's kind of how my brain pictures it too, of like the pelvis and the torso like wanting to work on the same plane of movement to kind of like you said, like increase efficiency and like energy transfer because of that.
But where I get kind of like scrambled and kind of in the dome, it's like, what plane are we talking about? Because the shoulders are going to side bend, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to adjust to different pitch heights and things like that. So it's not necessarily like they're on the same plane in that direction. It's because they're going to have to rotate too. So they're not really on the same plane in that direction. But I see what you mean. And maybe it's thinking more like a hula hoop, right? Where instead of kind of rotating where the hips kind of come underneath the torso and the torso starts to work back, maybe it's something like, okay, now that the line that we talked about through the spine into the ground, like if they hold that plane and the hips and torso stay in that plane, they can side bend as much as they want as long as they kind of hold that position. Might be a better way to talk about it, of like positionally the torso and the pelvis stay in the same spot. There's a good biomechanics book, hitting biomechanics book by I believe his name's Bob Kynes, that I read, and he's very into having this kind of vertical position of kind of the hips and pelvis, where we're talking about like imagine you had like a marker kind of between your at the top of your sternum, between your collarbone, and a marker kind of right in the middle of your pelvis, and having those two points pretty much on top of each other and maintaining that the entire time. If we start to get that kind of torso too far back or too far forward, it's going to mess with the swing plane, or if that moves too much as we're rotating, we can kind of lose space. So maybe it's something along there, but I think overall, like the idea of maintaining space, maintaining posture, is an important one, but maybe not something we can quite measure yet.
Is there a possibility of being able to measure the change in angle or the change in correlation of distance of, so when that hip starts working its way up, essentially the right hip bone, instead of, and I guess what I'm necessarily, and I'm pulling up a video right here so that way I can try and possibly describe a little bit more of what I'm think I'm trying to say, is me personally, for the swing and the rotation, I want the hip, the left hip and the left shoulder, to stay the same distance from each other, and the right shoulder and the right hip to stay the same distance. So as this gentleman is swinging, that right hip is actually going to get closer to the right shoulder, and we're going to get more of a separation of the left hip to the left shoulder. So instead of him staying here and rotating to where hip shoulder plane, he's getting where he's here, where his hips are flat and then shoulders here. So that this is getting tighter, or that is extending, where I feel like in a high level hitter or a more consistent hitter that's able to maintain space, that hip is going to get pushed down, and that here is going to stay the same, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, definitely.
And if that's something, if that's the same thing I was saying earlier, let me know too.
Yeah. Oh, I think same thing, just a little bit different way to describe it. Something golf biomechanics talks about a lot, about like maintaining that distance between your hips and your shoulders. Obviously, golf is a little bit different. You're not adjusting to planes or anything like that. But yeah, I kind of see that concept, kind of bleeding into this for sure. Definitely something smarter people than me could look into and kind of, run some correlations and figure out the distances there. But you know, that's definitely something we can give a shot, for.
Burnsy?
I like listening to you guys talk. But no, I think I know what you guys mean, but that, especially like when you put it like that, Reynolds, like that makes a lot of sense. Like with that, like, sorry, I'm a lefty. You guys are fucking righties, but I'm like that left shoulder wants to like sag down as I'm going. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's interesting, like the distinction between this athlete, where there's like very obvious, distinct, like hip movements, right? That kind of cause that. And then the other athlete, who I would say like loses space to.
Ooh, and I also wanted to talk about this one too.
His is not necessarily because his hips like push up. He didn't get into posterior tilt really quickly or like extend as fast, but he seems to lose that space more because of kind of like you were talking about Burns, where like Burns Reynolds, the other Connor, the right hip kind of pushing forward out towards the plate. That's causing the distance between that shoulder and that hip to get closer now.
And what you had mentioned earlier on this one is that lead hip doesn't move. And so, again, I'm not necessarily the smartest in when it comes to terminology and everything like that. But what I've seen with athletes in this kind of scenario, so I think the first athlete that we were just referring to and talking about, I think that method of losing space is the fact that they lose space because their hips are working up. Whereas this athlete, I almost talk about a hitter like this as a door frame. So instead of him rotating around his spine and his spine being the center of rotation, with that lead hip necessarily not, like you said, going backwards towards the catcher soon enough, what I feel is that instead of him rotating around his spine, like you said, he's rotating around the front hip. But now, so if this was a door, and instead of the door being the hinge in the middle, right now the hinge is on his front hip, like this left pinky. So now when he swings, his backside is actually entering the zone and getting closer to the plate into that contact zone. And so instead of him being able to have where his front side is essentially clearing as the same rate as his backside is entering, his front side is blocked and stuck. And so that's then making, instead of it being a transform of, and actually let me grab this bat right here. So instead of, if this knob is his front hip and the end of the barrel is his back hip, instead of him rotating around the middle to where his front hip is leaving or clearing as the same rate as his back hip, right now he's rotating like this. So then that's essentially making to where everything is going out. And so again, here we're going to have to probably get a very out front point of contact, because he has to get his hands clear in front of his body to allow him to accelerate, because with his back hip essentially pushing into the plate, he's just almost like I said, rotating into the swing. And to be able to build acceleration, you need space. If you don't have space, you can't accelerate, because there's not enough room to create acceleration. And so that's why I feel like both of these athletes are going to have to make contact with this ball very far in front of the plate. Again, when you're not able to rotate on the same plane, it's going to make it to where you're not having the optimal amount of centrifugal force, thus lower bat speed. And then again, further point of contact out in front. Now we're having to make swing decisions a lot sooner than we would like to.
Yeah. I feel like especially with all we're talking about, especially the hips, like we talk about like the fix of this, right? Like, I feel like a lot of what we're talking about isn't necessarily like obviously it's a swing fix, it's a biomechanics fix, but I feel like it's more getting into the gym and doing more movement stuff. And like, cause I feel like there's a bigger picture to this story, right? Where it's like, the dude's hips are fucking gunked up and like, he literally can't do that. Right. So it's about getting back from the swing and like actually doing a full body assessment with this dude and figuring out how this guy's hips work and be like, okay, this could like just in straight up layman's terms, like this guy's hip mobility sucks. Like we need to start, getting hip 90-90s in, different types of variations of that. Right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I think like you talked about, I'll wrap up this. Like when we talk about the position of the pelvis changing, right? Whether they're rotating around the front of their hip or they're pushing their hip forward, the position of the pelvis is changing. And like you said, Burns, that's going to affect like the way those hip joints operate. We don't have unlimited range of motion in those hip joints, and the operation of the hip joints in regards to like pelvis deceleration and like creating some stability in the lower half is so important. If those hip joints aren't stable enough, or you kind of hit that maximum point of mobility, especially on that lead hip, where we take a look at this hitter, he's gonna kind of like that front hip doesn't work back, So he's going to hit kind of his maximum amount of range of motion. And that would be like lead hip abduction is probably the best way to describe that, where he kind of hits that point there. And so the only way for his pelvis to now rotate is to take that back hip forward, because there's no more room, no more mobility in that front hip joint to actually like allow the pelvis to rotate. And so now everything kind of swings around like Reynolds is talking about. And so the pelvis struggles to decelerate because we're just kind of dragging the backside through. And so now the kinematic chain's all off. We don't have any stability in the lower half. The torso doesn't accelerate as fast. And the barrel gets really long and round, for sure.
Yeah, it's like he's definitely like, it just looks like he's compensating for something in his movement that he just can't do. And then that's causing that chain reaction.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like you can see it's like his that front hip just kind of like stops.
Yeah.
Like you can see it working, and then boom, right there. And then now we've lost it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like his hips end up like stopping too early and his bat's not going to get around. So his brain just goes, what if we just like keep turning? Because that seems to work. We'll just turn more, catch it out front, and we're good to go. And it probably works until, you know, he's at a B1 now. And he's just like, well, they throw hard and the ball spins more and I can't hit. It's like, well, yeah.
So interesting. One thing that I would throw out and mostly kind of just let it marinate unless we do want to kind of dive into it is at some point there becomes a fork in the road where – how we just mentioned this athlete, maybe there's something, some external thing that is the issue, right? And then that would look to be something that is identified during the body movement assessment and then just essentially skeletons and looking at the swing. Is this something to where it's like, okay, are we going to take these 2 months or however time you would have? Obviously, it might change depending on when the athlete comes in. Is it one of those where it's like, let's see if we can fix the root of this, or let's see how efficient we can be with what we have? If this was an athlete where we said, hey, let's see how good we can be with what we have to work with, I would almost feel like this could be a possible good candidate for a scissor kick kind of style swing on the basis.
Same thing, Reynolds. God damn it.
Good job, man.
Look at us, man. Look at us. Because, like, I have one athlete that I've worked with in the past where it was just like a year of us, like, just trying to grind it out and get more, like, hip turn. And that front hip just wouldn't freaking do it. And so finally, one day, I was like, all right, enough of beating a dead horse. Let's just rock a scissor kick. Like, I've tried everything that I've tried. Let's rock a scissor kick. Dude started absolutely crushing, and it just happened to work better for him. And with me not necessarily having a, sports body degree to be able to go over and do everything, like, I'm a hitting guy. And so, like, are there other things that if I was more knowledgeable in other areas, could I possibly fix it? Maybe. But essentially for me at the end of the day, it was like, all right, fuck it. Like, we're going to a scissor kick. It works better for you. Timing's better. Everything like that. So, With that kind of athlete, like, at what point do you say, like, we're going to look and try something else? Or at what point do you say, we're going to keep doing what we're doing? We're going to figure it out. I think we can make that adjustment. Like, and obviously, like, maybe there isn't an answer to that right now. But, like, how do you guys feel on that?
I mean, I think with so much of hitting, it also, like, the swing and all that stuff is like one of the big puzzle pieces, but I think a lot of it comes down to movement quality and strength of the athlete, and strengthen them in the specific positions they need to get into. Right. I think it comes down to too, like, if you're looking at that assessment of that guy, let's say he's mid season, that's like, you know, it's kind of like, we got what we got right now. We've got to try and fight a way through this. Like, if that's the beginning of the off season, it's like, okay, let's take a fucking big step back here, right? Let's do a full body assessment. Let's see, and let's try and improve that movement quality. You know, like the biggest thing of like where I work and what we do is, you know, my job as a hitting coach is pretty freaking easy because my brother takes care of all of the movement assessments and making sure that you know, if a dude's got shitty hip ER, they're working on that, right? I don't really need to worry about that because I know it's going to keep getting better. Things like that. I think it just depends on, one, what athlete you're dealing with, what age he is. Is the off season? Is it in season? Like, where are we at with that, right? But I also think even if it is in season, like, why not continue to improve movement and get a specific mobility routine in? Because you can, even when you're in season, you can still do that type of stuff, right? So I think it's kind of taking that scope out and getting outside of the swing a little bit and just straight up looking, okay, what does your body suck at? What is it good at? Let's try and figure that out.
Yeah, I mean, why bet on one horse when you could bet on all of them? You know, like man, do it all. Like, it's probably not going to hurt. I think I this might be a little bit of a hot take, but I would bet very rarely do guys range of motion. Very rarely is that the barrier to them being successful at the plate. I think more often than not, there is a movement solution that can work within that. Now, to Burns's point, if they had better range of motion, would that make it even better? Probably. So yeah, I think my opinion would just be like, yeah, but just do both, just do it all, like, cause it's good for you. And to Reynolds' point, I think the idea of a guy like this, like kicking back, scissoring, is how I would go about adjusting a guy that I think loses space. Because I think a lot of the time when we think of guys that lose space or kind of hip extended, whatever you want to call it, the root of the issue is that they don't stay anchored in their back leg long enough. Like, they don't, they have to move their hips forward because they're compensating for whatever, they're compensating to lose space. So they have to push the hips forward to try and get the bat around. And so that back foot just gets removed from the equation way too quickly. And so that center of rotation we talked about is now kind of more around their front side than their back side. And so the more we can keep them anchored, the better off they're going to be. And whether that looks like a scissor kick or whether it looks like, hey, we're going to work on your hip hinge so you could just stay back longer. I think both are good options. And it, like you said, it just depends on like how the athlete naturally wants to move. For example, like this athlete that we looked at, the guy that kind of rotates around his front hip, his kind of solution was just like, let's stay back longer. Let's not go forward as much. Let's just stay back longer. And it cleaned up really quickly. Versus the other athlete, like his solution was just like, I'm not going to let my heel come off the ground. My back heel is just not going to come off the ground ever. I'm still going to get forward, but it's going to stay anchored long enough to allow my hips to actually rotate more in the middle. And he's a high school kid. So like the change doesn't have to be as drastic to see like big rewards. And that seemed to work really well for him. But it just kind of comes down to the athlete. And so like, just do all of the things that you need to.
Hell yeah. I'm with that. I think that is another phenomenal down the rabbit hole with JP. For anyone listening, if you guys have any comments as you guys are listening, like, please feel free, put them down below. If you guys are answering along with us, we will definitely look back at those. So be active in there. We will look it up. So that was a great segment.
That was nice. I kind of like that a little bit more of a group chat rather than me just rambling.
I do like you rambling though.
I do as well. I think this is a phenomenal time for us to look to move into digesting. We had an absolute hot one today. I woke up and out of nowhere, we had some beef. We had some beef rolling. So the only reason that I essentially looked to jump into this one, because it was a pitcher's beef, is because one, Pete Bayer, who is a pitcher from Fast Performance, he's a big Driveline guy as well. He had a video taken from one of Driveline's mocap sessions and was reposted by a gentleman by Lance Wheeler. Lance is a pitching guy that is sucks the juices of the core velocity belt religiously, and is a big anti anyone essentially saying anything against him, and he'll block you right away. So he's blocked a few guys here in the building, and so once I saw that Pete was involved, once I saw that Lance was involved, and then third, I saw our boy Chad Longworth was deep in this shit. And so I was like, all right, we got to jump in. I think I literally woke up, grabbed the phone, and within 5 minutes, I shot my first tweet out. So we woke up pretty hot. So the first tweet that essentially like kind of started this whole thing off was, like I said, a side view of Pete doing a pull down, or not pull down, it was a throw off of a mound. And his head moves a lot. And so with his head moving a lot, there's a lot of talk about how he needs to essentially, he's going to lose command because he's not seeing the catcher and everything like that. And so let me find it right here. Lance puts out a tweet that says, one of my favorite ways to improve command and prepare for live competitions is never even looking at the target. Here's a great video by Driveline showing how it's all done. So Pete decided to respond showing the full video of him actually throwing a ball 96 miles an hour right down the dick. And so essentially kind of like went completely against what Lance had to say. He says, Lance, you can work on both velocity and command. There's a time and a place for both of them in training. Also, if you want to see where that pitch was, here it is. Well, I don't think Lance happened to get a look at it because he continued to keep talking shit. But this is where Chad Longworth comes in. Chad says, Driveline lives rent-free in Lance's kitchen. Core velocity belt, where I said earlier Lance sucks the juices of the core velocity belt till they are dry, apparently is a 69 both way kind of relationship. So here we have core velocity belt responding, sure, saying,
"I'm pretty sure he made core velocity."
Yes, but I, by also just to interject too with that, like I guarantee you that's him on that.
I'm pretty sure he owns.
I didn't know he was like. I didn't know he was core velocity.
He needed core. I am fucking 99% sure that that is him on a different account, just going, oh, I'm gonna get another fucking Twitter account
back and forth. Oh, like don't you love the cesspool of Twitter? So he says, LOL. I think Lance's point was twofold: the movement of the head and gaze would drastically impact the metrics. Yet it was highlighted on social media channels selling in their biomechanical services. Starting to really think you guys missed the point. So Chad then responds with, why do you care? Why do you care? Sell your product and showcase your points. If your mousetrap is better, then you will win. People aren't going to stop going to Driveline regardless of what you have to say. Lance then responded with saying, I didn't just think it was funny that the Driveline guys like yourself are defending the video. You guys are missing the point. What's the purpose of mocap? What are the head and the eyes doing at Impact of Metrics? Why be mad at me? I didn't post the original video. So I responded then saying, hey, Lance, why don't you go look at the video of it being 96 down the middle? You keep having these series based off of just seeing one side of the motion, and then you get proved wrong every single time. No response to that one. But what absolutely went crazy is that, where is it? Oh, no, it's been deleted by... They deleted them. No. Where is it? So, essentially, Chad has a check mark, blue check mark. And Core Velocity Belt messaged him and essentially it was just like, did you have to pay for your blue check mark? Well... Chad has like 30,000 people that follow him on social media, runs his own place. He's bought multiple core velocities and essentially was just like, oh, these are the guy. Like, how do we have a company right now that's talking shit to me when I've purchased multiple things of their product, blah, blah, blah. And then they kept just talking shit to him and like going back and forth on the comments. And so then Lance put out some other absolutely ridiculous tweet that I then also responded back to, essentially saying, you're just a baby that blocks anybody that actually is able to prove that you're wrong. I was immediately blocked within a few minutes of that. So that's kind of the Twitter beef. Essentially, Lance You're an absolute idiot. I think you're actually going to be the start of a merch series that we have here at Fast, saying hashtag Lance blocked me, with a screenshot of the tweet that caused Lance to block us. And so I think we're going to look to do something here with that. So really excited to be looking out for that merch. But outside of that, like, I don't know, what do you guys, to have a brand account essentially talking shit to Chad Longworth essentially is absolutely wild to me.
All right, Reynolds, like, we're going to just step back from that whole thing. Okay. Taylor and Ethan, who is our pitching guy, have been at it at this dude forever. All right. The guy's a loser.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't believe in pitching drills. And it's like, why? What the fuck do you mean? Essentially, Taylor and Ethan actually like the core velocity build. We've discussed buying them. We will not, though, because he's a fucking douche. Like, we're not giving that guy fucking business.
I have a substitute for you. You out of here? See ya.
Beauty.
Like, I have a replacement for you.
Okay. Then send that our way because we like it. But, like, we're not giving that guy our business. He's a douche. He just, exactly what you said. He just fucking will say shit. You go after him, he'll block you, right? Well, fuck, man. Like, breaking down the video, literally, he gets in his leg up. He's looking, and then he goes, and it's like, so, fuck, he picked up the target. Shut up. Just shut up. And, like, god damn it, man. I just fucking hate this shit so much. Like, why are we doing this? What's the fucking point of this stupid-ass interaction, Matt? Like, you can take a fucking clip anywhere and be like, that's wrong. And it's like, well, that's not the whole fucking thing. This is one swing. This is one pitch. This is one fucking drill. Like, it's so easy to just pick apart every little fucking detail. Christ, just why? Why do you have to do that? So stupid.
Oh, Longing Birds gets fired up, baby.
Feel it. Feel it.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, I mean, I've gotten a shout out from Lance before. You know, he's like, hey, you know, so at least a driveline guy gets it. So, you know, apparently I get it, whatever that means. Like Burns said, like, and when you look at just Lance and what he talks about, from like a pitching mechanics perspective, I'm down. Like, core stability is important. Like, I think the hinge is really important. I think the way you interact with the ground is really important. I'm not a pitching guy, so I can't really comment on that. But, like, overall, as far as, like, movement principles go, like, I'm all in. But as far as, like, a company's Twitter account getting into a Twitter beef is a bad look. I think Connor Watson tweeted something along the lines of, I don't have any dog in this fight, but I think it's funny when a Twitter account talks about how everybody's just trying to sell their product when the Twitter account is the name of a product. And I think that kind of summed it up for me. I just don't understand when quote unquote corporate accounts or product accounts start trashing other products with the product already tagged. It's like, I don't know. It's like when, like, Wendy's and, you know, McDonald's getting Twitter beefs. It's just like, what? This is just weird. Like, this is just weird.
Like, but, like,
throw ads at me. Like,
to me, like, I feel like when you have, like, Wendy's and McDonald's, when their Twitter accounts are going after it, I feel like that's one thing. Because it's like, nobody knows who's on the other end of the McDonald's account. No one knows who's on the other side of Wendy's. That is all for marketing. Like, they're going into that saying, how can we be viral and do this? To me, this is just Twitter warriors in the replies, like, fucking battling it out. Like, I feel like that is more so to talk shit, like, and not even, like, jokingly talk shit, just to, like, literally, like, be an immature, like, account. Like, I'm trying to, like, hold back from saying, like, mean, like, truly mean things. Because, like, I just don't understand what's the point of that at all to any degree. because it's like you're not big enough for anyone to outside of this space give a fuck. So like you're not gonna go viral. You're only gonna be talked amongst the people that already know you're kind of a piece of shit. So you're not gonna gain anybody new from it. You're not gonna change anybody's mind because you block everybody and put yourself in an echo chamber. So that way, if anybody says anything against what you have to say, they're vanished, they're gone, the poof. And so you're just surrounded by a bunch of yes men. Like, there's no winning. Like, you're not going to go to McDonald's now. Like, nobody's going to go to Core Velocity Bell and be like, hey, I saw you getting in that Twitter beef. Like, oh, I really want your product now. Do you have a coupon code or, like, a promo? Like, nobody's going to do that. So, I don't know. I feel like it's more so just displaying and allowing shitty people to be shitty. And, like, I don't know. There's another product called PowerCore 360. That is, in my opinion, before any of this shit went down, I was liking their stuff way better. We've actually had the owner come down. He's based out of Fort Collins. Gave us a full demo on some guys on the pitching side and on the hitting side. I like it a lot more, and their customer service is pretty good. I actually sent it out a tweet to Chad Longworth. And he said that he's going to take a look into them. And that's who I would say for you, Burns. With the PowerCore Velocity. PowerCore 360. PowerCore 360. There you go.
And I think Chad's tweet was very, very good, too, because Lance just does not like driveline pitching. He hates driveline pitching for whatever reason. I'm not going to argue that whether
because they're better. They're better. Like,
I don't even want to touch that.
Like, you won't. I will. They're better. And that hurts him. That makes him mad. That makes him, he's like, ugh.
I don't like something, right? What are my options? A, ignore it. Right? Easy. B, tell people around me that it's not very good. Okay. Or C, go on Twitter. And just anybody that'll read it, I'm just going to do it all the time. Like, that seems to be, like, the entire Twitter feed. Like, give us the other side. Like, I would rather Lance, instead of talking about how much he doesn't like something, I would rather have him talk more about, like, what he does like. Because, like I said, I do like the thoughts. I do like the movement theory. I do like the, like, I think he's got a good brain when it comes to that kind of stuff. But all I ever hear is, like, how bad everything else is. Just, like, tell me what you like. Tell me what gets you excited. Tell me, like, give me some positives. Who do you like talking about? Like, you know, that kind of stuff. And now, that's, once again, it's probably just true about Twitter in general. Like, quit paying attention to what everybody else is doing. Just tell me what gets you fired up.
Well, and it makes me think about it to where any coach that you guys have ever had or any players that have told you about a coach that they have where, if you question them, they get pissed. They get annoyed. Why are you questioning what I'm teaching? Why are you questioning my coaching? Why are you questioning what drills we're doing? Why are you questioning what movement I'm having you do? That generally happens because the coach actually doesn't have the answer for the athlete. And so they get put into a defensive position of, well, I can't just blanketly say, I have no idea why we're doing this, but I don't know, I saw somebody else do it, or this is how we've always done it, or whatever it is. So it's just like, why are you questioning what I'm saying? Blah, blah, blah. It's like, whereas, I don't know, myself, and I'm assuming you guys, anybody here at FAST, like, anytime an athlete questions, why are we doing this? It's like, oh, we're doing this because of boom, 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 boom. And I'll actually have a dialogue or a conversation with the athlete. It's like, if you don't think that this is productive with the reasons I've laid out, let me hear your counterpoint and let's try and get to a spot where we can both be on the same page with this. That's because I feel like I understand the why and the how of what we are doing. Whereas if you have somebody that doesn't understand the why or how, or maybe he isn't able to say the things that he believes because he doesn't know what he believes. All he knows is that he hates driveline and that just lives rent-free in his head. They're doing backstrokes right now, just living up in the dome. And if you don't have anything to say that is positive, you're going to be left with only things that are negative to say. And essentially, if all you have are negative things to say, I think that's all you're able to say. And I think that shows more so what your knowledge level is than anything else. Bro, Power Core 360. Go check them out. All right, boys. We have anything else that we want to kind of chit-chat on the head chat about?
I'm really. And it's, I think the, you know, I'm just excited for baseball. I'm excited to watch you play baseball. That's what I'm pumped about. I'm getting my, all my, you know, my MLB TV dialed. I'm getting, you know, my schedule out for all the college guys. Like I'm going to be watching baseball.
Hey, I got a PSA. Why one fucking junior college websites get better at fucking updating your stats and keeping live stats. Holy Christ. Yes. You know, fucking how my guy did today. Won't get posted for 3 days. Doesn't happen. Fucking, it's absurd. 3, just post it. Just get it on there quick. I don't know. Ridiculous.
I love it. I love it. Outside of that, man. Oh, did you guys hear about YouTube TV and MLB? MLB's not on YouTube TV anymore.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, so that, I think Fuzzy was talking about it on his YouTube channel. I think that loses like 10 million possible people to that would have been able to watch on YouTube TV. Now don't, so that's pretty cool.
Well, if we know anything about the MLB, they stuck in marketing and stuck at doing stuff.
Grow the game, baby. Let's do it by having less options. Yeah. I love it. Well, thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We really appreciate it. If you guys have any comments, questions, or concerns, please let us know. JP, where can the people find you?
The people can find me at JPFasone1 on all platforms now, I believe. I got that changed. I think after getting bugged by Reynolds enough, I think I changed it. But you might have to double check. If not, just search JP Pisone. I'll pop up somewhere.
There we go, baby. And Mr. Burns, what about you?
At Burns, AAY, Burns A on Twitter, and at HP Hitting on Instagram.
Hell yeah, baby. Thank you guys for tuning in. We appreciate you guys being here with us. And until next week.